The Gist. Interrupted by the pandemic and dramatically downsized, the NIH intramural study was still one of the most expensive and certainly the most comprehensive ME/CFS studies ever done. Nancy Klimas said the study was as thorough an evaluation as has ever been delivered in any clinical study that I know of in any disease. Avindra Nath, the leader of the effort, which ended up involving over 75 researchers, said it was easily the most complex project he'd ever led. Its findings were gobbled up by the media, and in the media, the reports were, in fact, overwhelmingly positive. But many in the ME/CFS community greeted the findings with alarm, something called effort preference. Walter Koroshetz, the director of the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, spent much of his introductory talk explaining what was meant by effort preference. He explained, "We tend to think of effort as something we consciously assess, but when neurologists use this term, they're referring to microsecond by microsecond decisions by the brain, which are below our consciousness. When our muscles just can't go any further, many times it's not that they've run out of energy, but that in a process called central fatigue, the brain has told them to stop. The study findings suggest that something else has gone wrong with the pathways in the brain that tell the muscles to move." Avindra Nath spoke of his deep commitment to solving this disease and, citing all the controversy, asked for a bit more trust. "In my experience, Nath has been open and available and has supported this disease in many ways. We lucked out when we got Nath." Nick Madian emphasized that effort, as applied to their work, is not under conscious control. The brain evaluates whether to move forward based on the amount of energy spent and the reward it sees is available. If the cost-to-benefit ratio of an action is low, the brain will send messages in the form of fatigue, difficulty moving, etc., to make sure the activity is not carried out. Most interestingly, this process is carried out in the brainstem, which is the locus of so many other things, from sensory to autonomic nervous system problems that are at play in ME/CFS. The brainstem regulates movement, in part by the generation of norepinephrine, which we will see is low in the cerebral spinal fluid in ME/CFS. Norepinephrine activates pathways in the evaluation network. If the evaluation network says no, it will be very difficult to move. Again, these pathways are not under conscious control. Parkinson's disease, stroke, dementia, and brain damage can all affect the evaluation network in similar ways as ME/CFS. And Madian noted that dopamine-enhancing drugs help Parkinson's patients to engage with physical tasks more readily. Since it's the motor cortex that tells the muscles to move, the motor cortex was checked out, but both it and the pathways in the brain that engage it were found to behave normally. Activity in the temporal parietal junction pathway, though, which assists in motor control and motor control signaling, was reduced. In the end, reduced levels of norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin in the cerebral spinal fluid were believed to contribute to the loss of motor control and the inability of ME/CFS patients to exert themselves. Norepinephrine in particular was signaled out because of the crucial role it plays in movement and in maintaining brain energy levels. In the end, the problems are believed to start in the brainstem and the hypothalamus, two areas that are already of high interest in ME/CFS. In the immune system, multiple checkpoints that are required to activate T and B cells were found, as was T cell exhaustion. The inability of these later or adaptive immune cells to track down and kill pathogens or pathogen-infected cells could be causing the activation of the more primitive, less effective, and highly inflammatory innate immune system that is seen in ME/CFS. Dr. Nath suggested drugs that could help. The gut flora of the ME/CFS patients was less diverse, and lower levels of butyrate-producing bacteria were found. Both of these have been seen before in ME/CFS, and work is ongoing to further explore these findings. Interestingly, low butyrate levels were also found in ME/CFS patients' cerebrospinal fluid. The molecular biology, or omics, studies demonstrated how important it is in this very important area of research to separate males from females. Every time this was done, dramatic differences were found between the healthy controls and the ME/CFS patients, even when the sample sizes were very small. Once again, this study validated past findings in ME/CFS, including problems with fatty acid oxidation, mitochondrial functioning, lipids, and proteins. The exercise physiology study found that people with ME/CFS were unable to generate normal amounts of energy to the extent that performing activities of daily living would be difficult. No increased incidence of postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS, was found, in part because similar numbers of the healthy controls tested positive for POTS. You can have POTS and still be healthy. Post-exertional malaise is being explored in further studies. Ultimately, the authors proposed that an infection leads to immune dysfunction and changes in the gut microflora, leading to impact the brain, leading to decreased production of catecholamines like norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin. This disrupts autonomic nervous system functioning and impacts the ability to exercise. A wonky hypothalamus results in decreased activation of the temporoparietal junction when people with ME/CFS try to move. That results in reduced engagement of the motor system, problems with movement, and ultimately exertion. The data set from the study is available to anyone. I counted at least 8 ongoing studies within the NIH that have resulted from this work. Severely ill people who participated in the study spoke, including one person who had to be carried out on a stretcher. Another who could not sit upright for 15 minutes without severe symptoms spoke. They all lauded Brian Wallett and his team for their attention and care. Despite all the angst and controversy the study findings first aroused, this study was clearly a significant success for the ME/CFS community. Despite its reduced size, it achieved its goal of providing numerous openings for future research, and it suggested that if done right, ME/CFS is very amenable to study, even when small sample sizes are present. Past findings were validated: B and T cell abnormalities, T cell exhaustion, brain stem abnormalities, mitochondrial issues, low heart rate variability, low gut butyrate, low gut diversity, lipid abnormalities, reduced energy output, reduced dopamine, gender effects, and promising ones popped up, such as temporal parietal junction functioning linked with poor motor performance, reduced cerebral spinal fluid norepinephrine and butyrate levels. The reduced cerebral spinal fluid norepinephrine findings appear to present a particularly enticing finding, as the low norepinephrine production in a potentially critical area in ME/CFS, the brainstem, could affect not only the effort, reward, movement issues found, but also brain energy levels. Even the researchers seemed startled by the large separations between healthy controls and ME/CFS patients that showed up once biological sex differences were taken into account. These findings suggest that simply separating the genders or sexes in future studies, or by reasserting past study results by taking into account biological sex, could be very helpful indeed. Several panelists at the symposium, including Dr. Nath, declared that it was time for clinical trials to take place.